Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Okay, this is reading the second part of April the 6th, New Scientist. While I'm actually on an exercise bike, so just going to see how this goes. People who are listening to me will know that this is part of cardiac rehab, so you'll hear the exercise bike in the background. Okay, and this is one way to just pass the time. Deceptive robot tells lies to regain our trust. Betraying someone and lying about... So I should mention this is part of the rehab. They get me doing something cognitive and also exercises or balancing. And so I'm just following that forward. Okay, this is at the hospital. Okay, betraying someone and lying about... It is pretty low, especially if you're a robot. Isn't that amazing? An experiment on the interactions between humans and robots reveals just how easy it is for robots to regain the trust by fibbing after a misdeed. This is interesting in that I wouldn't really class this very much as a robot. The Devious robot in question is the NAO, a 58-centimeter high humanoid that moves and interacts with people. Sarah Sebo of Yale University and her colleagues arranged for 82 people to complete for points against NAO in an asteroid shooting computer game. How great. In some rounds, a special asteroid blaster was awarded to either human or NAO. It could get bonus points when shooting an asteroid or for temporarily immobilizing an opponent. Ahead of 10 games played together, the robot promised it wouldn't immobilize the player, but betrayal was programmed into its nature. It always broke its promise at round 3. To test the best route back from betrayal, the robot framed the immobilization as a mistake with half the human players. "Oh no, I hit the wrong button," it would say. The other half yelled, "Yes! You're immobilized." If it then either apologized or denied it had broken its promise, the players to each group. People were twice as likely to take revenge by immobilizing the robot in the following round if they thought the robot betrayed it for the purpose rather than an accident. The same is true if an NAO simply denied its actions. "Personally, I think robots should be 100% honest and never lie," says Sebo, who presented the work at the National Conference of Human-Robot Interactions in Daegu, South Korea. But the results suggest an advantage in lying to a person to compromise their trust. Framing a betrayal and incompetence could lead a robot being treated better by people. Oh, I think that's really rubbish research, unfortunately. So that article was by Donna Liu. The next article, A New Way to Multiply Numbers, by Gilad Ahmet. Forget your times tables. Mathematics have found a faster way to multiply two numbers together. The method, which works only for whole numbers, is a landmark result in computer science. Oh, well, you know what I would say. Even if it's got decimal points, you just multiply and then divide by 10, wouldn't you? Okay. From computer science. Quote, "This is big news," end quote, says Joshua Cooper at the University of South Carolina. To understand the technique devised by David Harley, the University of New South Wales, Australia, and Joris van der Hoorn of the École Polytechnique near Paris, France, it helps to think back to when you learned at school. Write down two numbers, one on top of the other, and then painstakingly multiply each digit of one by each digit of the other before adding all the results together. I was just trying to think. You only have to multiply the number 10 times by 0, 1 up to 9, store those as the results, and then shift them appropriately across, don't you? Yeah. I don't know what they're talking about. This is an ancient algorithm, said Cooper. if your two numbers each have n digits, this way of multiplying will require roughly n squared individual calculations. I find it hard to understand. The question is, can you do better, says Cooper? Starting in the 1960s, mathematicians began to prove that they could. First, Anatoly Kornilushba found an algorithm that could turn the answer into no more than 10 to the 1.8, rather than n squared, 10 to the, into the 1.58 steps. And in 71, Arnold and Volkerstraten found a way to peg the number of steps into a complicated expression, n star log n star, whatever that means, log n, which is the log in the short form of the algorithm. Oh, which log is for a logarithm in the short form? I don't know what that means. These advances had a major impact on computing, whereas a computer using longhand multiplication would take 6 months to multiply 2 billion digits altogether, says Harvey. Strawn-Age-Strassen algorithm can fit into 26 seconds. Oh, I'm missing something here. The landmark paper in, the division might be more likely. The landmark paper in 1971 paper also suggests a possible improvement, a tantalizing prediction that the multiplication might one day be no more than n star log n, whatever that means, or n times log n. You don't need it. I don't know what they're doing there. Now, Harvey and Van der Hoeven seem to have proved in this paper that they have posted online. It finally appears to be possible, says Cooper. It passes the smell test, whatever that means. There's a quote. Quote, if the result is correct, it's a major achievement in computational complexity theory, said Frederick Jason of INERA, the French Research Institute for Digital Sciences in Bordeaux. The new ideas in this work are likely to inspire further research and could lead to practical improvements down the road. What a blur statement. Cooper praises the originality of the work, although he stresses the complexity of the maths. Quote, you think, geez, but it's not applying two integers. How complicated can it get? But boy, it gets complicated. I really don't understand it. So, say you're multiplying something by 123, multiply it by 1 and shift it 2, multiply it by 2, shift it stuff, and then you add it all up and 3, and then no, don't shift it, and add them all up. Don't quite understand it. So will this make calculating your tax returns easier? For human beings, working with pencil and paper, absolutely not, says Harvey. Needed, indeed. Their version of the proof only works for numbers with more than 20 trillion, trillion, trillion digits. My God, yeah. The work, astronomical force, comically short, trying to describe this number, he says. While future improvements in the algorithms make sense the proof to more 100 numbers, only a few trillion digits along, Cooper thinks the real value lies elsewhere. From a theoretical perspective, he says, this work allows programmers to provide a definite guarantee how long a certain algorithm will take. We're optimistic, quote, this is a quote, we're optimistic that our new paper will allow us to achieve further practical speed-ups, says Van der Hoeven. Okay, we're on like 26 joules. I've only been cycling for 8 minutes, so it feels dreadful. Okay, this news to technology, a question and answer thing by Frank Swain. He's doing, or it's a, he's not asking anyone a question, he's giving questions and then he's answering them. The European Union has passed a wide-ranging update to the copyright rules, which become law when individual member states enshrine in national legislation. Most of the changes in the EU copyright directive are uncontroversial, setting out how copyright is managed and licensed, but Article 13 will have a huge effect on how material is shared online. Question, what is Article 13? The users, the directive is about marking copyright rules fit for the digital era. To comply with Article 13, platforms such as YouTube and SoundCloud will need to ensure copyright materials on their sites is licensed, guaranteeing the original artist's payment for its use. Non-profit encyclopedias like Wikipedia and cloud storage services are exempt. Next question, why do we need it? I sort of like this way of writing, but it's like a FAQ for an area, except I think it should be a standard form, i.e. that all articles should be written long form and in this form. Why do we need it? Right holders say the rules will put an end to online pirating of music and video and will challenge the power of the tech giants like Google and YouTube, forcing them to pay for the content they aggregate. However, critics say the opposite is true, with smaller websites most adversely affected by the directive. How does it affect the way I use the internet? It's platform owners rather than internet users that will bear the brunt of these new rules, but they may spell the end for some of your favourite content sharing websites. If you own a website or a form in which people can post text, images and video clips, you will be responsible for ensuring that no unlicensed material appears. Why is it controversial? Next question. How long have you got? Users say the rules risk killing off vibrant net culture, such as memes, of course. And this is appropriation of art, which often repurpose unlicensed materials. And the legal status of streamers who post videos of themselves playing games online is in question. Website owners aren't required to install content monitoring software to detect copyright material, but practically it will be impossible to guarantee the site isn't infringing rules without this software. I don't know. Myself, is, you know, how we regulate MA18. And we ask for declarations. It's very hard to make these tools, and they have made bad decisions, says Kim Killock at the Open Rights Group in the UK Digital Rights Campaign organisation. The monitoring software could mean people have their content unfairly removed over zealous bots. Article 13 will require the site owners to implement a complaint process to deal with the disputed decisions, but Killock says this is unlikely to fix the problems. Quote, our experience pretty much everywhere is people generally don't complain. They worry about the effects on their reputation, they worry about the legal ramifications, he says. Rather than risk further sanctions, users simply stop making content online publication. True. The next question. Still something must have been done about piracy, right? Depends on who you ask. Music and video producers are likely to hard to see change the past. Other questions whether the problem of copyright infringement is really serious enough to require such sweeping legislation. What happens next? There's likely to be a series of campaigns against the changes as well as legal challenges in national and EU courts. Next article by Adam Vaughan. Articles off the shores of the Galapagos. The waters around the Galapagos Islands, a hotspot for biodiversity off the coast of Ecuador, have been invaded by more non-invasive species than previously thought. While the number of non-invasive species on land across the World Heritage Site is well documented, relatively little was known about those in the marine environment, in English. Now, 48 such species have been found in the water, in addition to 5 known non-native species. I don't quite understand it. Invaded and non-native, I don't understand that. the organisms probably hitched a ride on ships from around the world. The actual number of non-native species is likely to be much greater as this base, which isn't the, how much did they say? 5 non-natives, okay. The surveys were only taken in certain habitats around 2 large islands, quote, from our knowledge of Simosalis. It wouldn't be surprised if the number was twice as many, i.e. 10. As a team member, Jim Carlton, and Williams College in Massachusetts. The invaders include worms, mussels, crabs, and sea squirts. There were also the Dinobiozoa, commonly known as the moss animal, which, as Amantha verticilla, can kill seagrass and mess up the floating fishing gear. Oh, there you go. 17 of the invaders had been spotted around the Galapagos Islands before, but they were wrongly thought to have been native species. I don't understand that. The effect of the alien species on the island's ecosystem is quite known, but it's likely to be a negative judgment experience from elsewhere, and could threaten the island's endemic marine species. What we know is the number of these invasive species clearly have impacts elsewhere in the world, says Carlton. Invasions in other places suggest that even more harmful species could be headed for the workers of the Galapagos, the team warns. This could include soft corals that could grow rapidly over New Coral, and the prospect of venomous lionfish arriving from the Caribbean via the Panama Canal. Bloody Panama Canal. Pretty amazing that America caused Panama to secede from Colombia. Just so horrible politics. News and Technology by Adam Vaughan again. Lions of genetic diversity in decline. One of Africa's last major lion strongholds has experienced a significant decline in its genetic diversity since the end of the 19th century, leaving the animal they must have gone to museums to get the DNA. Leaving animals more vulnerable to future threats. Oh. Let's get immediate problems that if they tended to kill less fit lions, it'd be great to take. I don't know how they do it. Okay. Researchers looked at the genetic diversity of African lions, has changed over time. They discovered the diversity of the population at the Savango Zambezi Reservation Area, which spans parts of Angola, Botswana, Namibia, Zambia, and Zimbabwe, has fallen up to 70% since 1895. This drop has been, also must have gone from museums, just because they didn't know about DNA in 1875. This drop is significant because it occurred in an area that is home to one of the continent's most important lion populations, says Simon Duris of the Zoological Society of London, who led the analysis, quote, "It's pointing out that we have to be careful, even these strongholds, not to let them split up into fragments," he says. I don't know. Surely, something I would have liked is to say 2%'s okay, 70% is bad, and 22% is a disaster. You know, he could give a statement to give us some idea what the figures are. It's known that there are now fewer lions in Africa, and they occupy a smaller area, but it was previously less clear about how they were doing in their heartland. Okay, yes, I understand this. The loss of genetic variation of the Zimbabwe Zambezi lions reduces their ability to adapt to future changes. Okay, the most obvious thesis is shifting climate, but changes in prey may impact them too. Quote, if you lose some of those lion populations or they're not mixing, you're going to lose the overall population's ability to withstand changes, said the Jews. It's hard to say, because what you want is a pulsation of isolation to bring out diversity, and then homogenization. It's a two-part thing. This is just from mathematical using evolution algorithms to find the optimums. So what you want to do is separate them into islands and then remix them. Otherwise, you've got to vary it to get these things. Okay. Our team was able to measure the shift in diversity over time, in part due to the 19th century British hunter called Friedrich Seelos. Many of the lions killed in the Zavoga area ended up in the Natural History Museum in London. We'll see. I don't know whether that's a representative sample. I thought it would be like that. In total, Drew Sanders' team were able to identify 27 relevant old lion samples from the museum. They compared the DNA taken from these and 204 lions living in the conservation area today. Stopping the decline in lion's genetic diversity will require political support. Most of these Mbango Zimbis in conservation area is only sparsely populated by humans. But in some parts, particularly Zimbabwe and Zambia, contain large swaths of subsistence and cattle farming, which can lead to tensions between farmers and the wildlife. In Botswana, there is a political will to protect the lions because the tourism is important for the country, as evidenced by the trophy hunting team. Trophy having banned said tourism. The key measure, I mentioned co-trophy hunting. It's amazing. You just get no... The amazing thing is that trophy hunting is actually get sycophant people in the power. It's an amazing situation. They ensure they're surrounded by stupid people. They like it. The key measures will be to remove some of the fencing in the Zambango Zibizi area to get wildlife corridors so lions populations can mix. The main thing is ensuring within this big area that the lions populations are connected to the Jews. Okay. Connected and unconnected, so you want to have a program where you have different corridors or whatever. There's Brett Morser with the International Union for Conservation of Nature says lion populations studied is one of the best observed on the continent. Quote, the picture of many other lion populations in Africa could be more bleak, I would agree. 22 minutes, 66 jaws. Oh, God. Biggest secret ever, celery white. It's interesting. Who is it? By Michael LaPlage. That's a very used to his style of writing. A record-breaking 13,200 changes that have been made to DNA for human cells using genome editing technique CRISPR. Clusters of regularly interspaced palindromic repeats. A beautiful way of actually doing what CRISPR is. Okay, the feat takes us a step closer to being able to thoroughly rewrite the genetic library of our cells and other organisms. I think more we want to just eliminate freeloading on our genes, which cause cancer. Half our genome, the complete set of DNA of our cells, consists of hundreds of thousands of copies of genetic parasites called transposons. So they're not viruses, but they just ensure they get repeated. These code for genes that copy and paste themselves from one location of the gene to another. Most copies of the transposons are so full of mutations that they no longer work. But many remain active and can cause cancer and other disorders. So what is it called? Transposons. So they're sections of DNA which have got instructions, copy and paste, written either side, and they have junk on them. But many remain active and cause cancers and other disorders if they paste themselves into the wrong spot. I wouldn't be in a rush to get rid of them though, because we don't understand why they work, why they're there, or how we've adapted to it. George Church of Harvard University and his colleagues decided to use CRISPR genome editing to deactivate the widespread transpond line 1. Well, I don't know CRISPR. It was a hit rate, but also a kill rate. They first tried using the standard form of CRISPR, which involves cutting DNA. By doing so, hundreds of sites killed the cells they found. That's where you go. The CRISPR has the guide RNA, which goes to the section of DNA you want to cut. It cuts it, and then it cuts it again and again and again until it's no longer usable. So the team turned to a newer form of CRISPR called base editing. This transforms one DNA letter to another without making any cuts. Using this, the team managed to edit half of the 26,000 active line 1 transplants in the cell. We hope in future to knock it down to 100% of active line elements. Although 13,200 edits were made successfully, the team is unable to assess how many extra unwanted mutations this process introduced. This is hard to figure out because line sequences are so repetitive. Tretchen's team set the previous record for most edits to 62 copies of a virus lurking in the genome of pig cells. That's why you can't have pig heart transplants, because the pigs have inbuilt viruses ready to go. So you've got to knock them out. Next, Church wants to make thousands of different changes to different sequences in the human cell in one go. Mutts learn to sniff out an epileptic attack. There's no author for this. Dogs seem to be able to sell someone who's had an epileptic seizure. This may help explain why support dogs of some people with epilepsy is trained to fetch and help things in the event of a seizure know when one is happening. Emil Cattell of the University of Rennes, France, and her colleagues wondered if the scent was involved. Well, dogs usually it is. To investigate, they got people with epilepsy to wipe their hands, forehead and neck with a pad immediately after a seizure, placing the pad in the bag and then breathing with the bag before sealing it. They also asked them to do the same after exercising, doing calm activity. This is incredible. Gee whiz, that's insane. Wow. It says so much about what must be happening in a seizure. Must be a sequence to get that chemicals coming out. Oh, I don't know. Using treats and rewards, the team now used these spaces to train 5 mixed breed dogs to recognize smells associated with seizures before sending them to the test. In each test, the dog had to choose between 7 scent samples from a single person, only one of which was collected after the seizure. Each dog did 9 tests involving samples from people with not encountered before. Okay, so there's 7 bags. That's 9 times 7. The 3 of the dogs scored 100%, with the other two identified the correct samples in 2/3 of the test. Oh, 5, yeah, okay. This shows the first time that despite people having different body odours, an epileptic seizure has a distinctive scent profile that dogs can learn to recognise. We don't know what molecules the dogs are detecting, but further research could tell us. Well, I'd like to have a go at that. Lab-grown spare blood vessels work. Human blood vessels created in a dish have been successfully added to the circulatory system of people. They are grown using a person's own tissues and could one day be used to replace arteries and damaged by heart disease. Okay, one day. Heather Pritchard and her team at Umach site, a technology firm in Durham, North Carolina, puts human smooth muscle cells to make the vessels. These cells were spread out on the scaffold and given nutrients to get them to produce the 3D network of proteins in the shape of a long vessel-like tube. I think that has to be wrong. I think that has to be wrong. Cells don't produce proteins like that. Okay. In this case, the tubes were implanted in people with kidney failure who needed lighter budge vessels added to their system to help them with dialysis. So this is a complementary in which blood filtered the medicine, the biomachine. The team found the implants became multi-layered tissues and could self-heal just like a person's own vessels. I don't understand. There's a lot more to pass for that one. Anyway. A self-driving car, a robot car, drives fast, fabulously and safely. A self-driving car has learned to make high-speed turns without losing control, a skill that is vital for emergency swerves. I find this hard to believe. J. Christian Gertz, from his colleagues from Stanford University in California. Use a type of artificial intelligence, yes?
And also, she, I just think she's listening to Mary. She, I've also got an all-time group at the time. Well,
for that break, I have to get up and close the door again. And, what is it? I'm 36 minutes in and 112 calories. I've got to get 200 calories burnt. Oh, okay. Right. Just check this is recording. Yep. Okay. This is so dubious. I hate these articles. Not the articles, but the idea. J. Christian Gertz of the College of South colleagues at Stanford University, California, used a type of artificial algorithm called neural networks. Oh, God. Which is loosely based on neural networks in our brains to create a self-driving system. They trained on data from more than 20,000 motion samples taken from test drives on a variety of surfaces. The team equipped a Volkswagen GTI car with the algorithm and tried it out on an oval-shaped track. It drove fast as physically possible on the road surface, bends and tyres, observing the motion from previous fractions of a second to adjust the steering and acceleration. I'm not really impressed. Even when cornering about 50 kilometres an hour, it deviated less than 50 centimetres from the desired turning path. Gee, I'm just not happy with this whole outcome. The team found that its neural network had also worked when the track was covered with snow or ice. Well, that's maybe interesting. Autonomous vehicles will need to control systems that can rapidly brake, accelerate, or steer safely in critical situations, such as emergencies and sudden swerves, is likely. I think you need to be able to have you can't have a black box which 1 million people die. When it makes a mistake, I don't know. Martian rivers came in extra wide sizes. Well, everything on Mars is bigger due to low gravity. Rivers on Mars were unusually broad compared to those on Earth today. To learn more about water features on Mars, Erwin, well, they're not flung as fast, are they? Erwin Kite, and they're going to have an ocean to stop. Erwin Kite, at the University of Chicago, and his team used images to measure the width of 205 well-preserved river channels there. They also looked at the size of their basins area, which all precipitation, snowmelt, and groundwater fills, feeds Zinc River. The team found that for given brains and size, rivers on Mars were more than twice as wide as Earth's. Quote, for reasons we don't understand, land features on Mars tend to be larger than those on Earth, says Luke DeBach at the University of Arizona. Encoding language is easy on the brain. Okay. And this is by no one. As you learn your first language, your brain stores just 1.5 megabytes of information, not much more than a computer floppy disk holds an old floppy disk. Gee. I shouldn't say what an old floppy disk is. I have a picture of it. Francis Mollock of the University of Rochester, New York, and his colleagues used a branch of mathematics called information theory to quantify how many bits of data you need to read and encode and learn English. To do this, they looked at various aspects of language. So the sounds made in context. I think because it's in a neural network, I just don't think it makes sense, but that's my own opinion. They began with phonemes, distinct sounds, make up words. There are 50 of the phonemes in English, each requiring 15 bits, so these still require 750 bits. That's in a kilobyte. So we need to learn to say individual words. The team found that learning the average English vocabulary size of 40,000 words requires 400,000 bits. Yeah. Understanding the meanings of the words requires a lot more. 12 million, which is megabytes, because it contains a lot of information. So the last bit is rubbish. Okay, knowing often certain words appear is also important in language learning. And storing the word frequency of information takes about 80,000 bits. Finally, syntax, the set of rules that govern sentences, requires the least, clocking on around 700 bits, which adds altogether to 5.6 megabits. What a load of palaver. Quite honestly. Killer fungi leash the apocalypse and biodiversity. It's a little bit of the frog thing, I bet. The extinction of 90 species of amphibians can be pinned down to a deadly fungal disease according to the most comprehensive attempt yet to map the impact. Since it emerged 30 years ago, cryptococcosis has contributed to the decline of more than 500 species of frogs, toads, salamanders, and nearly 7% of all amphibian species. Okay, so if you were to multiply 500 by 20, it's only 10,000 species, there you go. The toll means these diseases have wrought the greatest loss on biodiversity of any pathogen we know of, and no order of magnitude greater than other wildlife. What a lot of wanker diseases. This is a bat-killing white-nose syndrome. Previous work has been done on these disease spreads, and regional efforts have been made to gauge the impacts on frogs and other species. But a large international team of researchers behind the new study says it's the best effort yet to aggregate its dramatic effect globally. Trenton Gamma, the Zoological Society of London, says that shows that these effects have been extreme. Now, some of the fungus in part has been spread to really remote populations by overzealous researchers trying to check on the health of those things. Chytridiomycosis is called by Barrachomuthrium dendrobulatus and B. salamander rovans, two cytrid fungi. They are believed to have emerged in Asia in the 1980s. And the disease they cause spread rapidly, added by globalization and attracting wildlife and researchers, I would add. There was a peak of amphibian deaths about a decade later in a spike in 2000 when it hit South America. Okay, of course you've got more species there. And they're more connected. They're more superhighway, I suppose. There are small signs of hope. The number of new species hit by the disease is down. Some frogs appear to be evolving resistance to it, and antifungal treatments have been shown to work in some cases. Oh god, well. Okay. Smart PJs tell all if as well as you snooze. No author. Your pyjamas may soon be able to monitor sleep quality. Trish Andrews and a team at the University of Massachusetts have developed a pyjama shirt that can monitor breathing, heartbeat and movement. You can track the quality of your slumber, such as the amount of REM sleep you get, which is rapid eye movement, which is basically you're not actually dreaming during REM sleep, you're just flexing processes. It's quite interesting. Go through. I might read that book again. Thought to be important for encoding memories. I think it's after REM. We need REM for it to think I can go, but the REM doesn't encode it. It also can alert you to breathing issues during the night. The shirt has 5 lightweight sensors sewn into the lining for detect constant pressure. like that of a body pressed against the bed, the fifth positioned over the chest, senses rapid pressure changes, providing information about the heart rate and breathing. Signals travel to a tiny circuit board that looks for functions like an ordinary button. No, it looks as small. It looks like it. This has a built-in transmitter that sends the data to the computer for analysis. Pajama shirt is still in its early stages, i.e. its complete concept. It has been tested overnight with only 8 people, and the team is still in the process of ensuring the sensors are accurate for a variety of body shapes and heights. The work was presented at the recent meeting of the American Chemical Society. Crystal based fridges are a cool idea. The fridge that runs on plastic crystals would solve a big problem, cooling us and our food without warming the earth. Oh yeah. Refrigeration equipment, air conditioners and heat pumps use up to 30% of all electricity and may contain refrigerants that act as greenhouse gases if they end up in the atmosphere. Okay, being near the Chinese Academy of Sciences, Institute of Medical Research in Shenyang, and its colleagues have used an alternative solid cooling material known as plastic crystals. They believe these could use less energy, avoid leaking gases. I'm just highly skeptical of that, aren't you? Now, what was it? I was really trying to memorize something which I was looking at. Air hogs, something. Air pump for something. Oh yeah. Air blast. Okay. Conventional fridges use pressure to turn refrigerant gases into a liquid, which means re-evaporates, cooling the surroundings as it does. But solids change temperature in response to pressure have been floated as an alternative. Complete bollocks. Plastic crystals, soft powder like solids, have been considered materials to store energy. That is, the energy goes in one, some things out. Not transfer to heat. Store of energy and transfer of heat, different things. But Lee and his colleagues found that it works surprisingly well as a refrigerant. They had one type, neopentyl glycol, has a greater cooling effect than the other candidates. Well, I suppose if I was forced to write a paper. Okay. Dream of the new Apollo. Where are we? 143. 10 minutes, I'm not going. Oh, good. Dream of the new Apollo. The US wants to drastically accelerate the plan to return to the moon, but can it be done? Chelsea White investigates. The countdown has begun. Last week, US Vice President Mike Pence announced that NASA is being directed to put astronauts on the moon by 2024, the final year of Donald Trump's tenure, should he win re-election. My godfather, and he will. He will. I can imagine. Oh, you. Bit of a deal. It's an ambitious goal, and there are several obstacles to clear before we see new boot prints on the soil. Most crucially, reaching the moon requires a heavy lift launch vehicle, a rocket that can boost 20 to 50 tons, or that's a big range, in a low Earth orbit and carry a crew, cargo, and a vast amounts of fuel for the trip. So now it doesn't need a vast amount of fuel, which the main thing is getting at. NASA doesn't have one, but it isn't for lack of effort. In 2010, the then President Barack Obama gave the space agency the go-ahead to design and build an space launch system, SLS, a heavy lift rocket to rival the Saturn V rocket that powered the Apollo astronauts' missions. NASA contracted Boeing in 2012 to build the SLS, but the firm has overspent on the project by billions of dollars and run into delay after delay. Surprise. This is the entire thing, is that you're going to overspend, you've got to really overspend. As part of, and also, they were just pumping out Saturn's, what was it, Apollo 17. As part of this announcement, Pence has said that commercial rockets, such as SpaceX, could offer an alternative. Quote, "We're not committed to one contractor," he said. "If our current contractors can't meet the objective, then we'll find our one that will." Good on you. Either way, is going to be expensive. And the new mission came with no promise of a politically difficult budget increase. It seems highly unlikely Congress would agree to provide the massive infusion of funds needed to accomplish the goal, whether NASA builds the hardware itself or buys services from commercial companies, says Marcia Smith, Space Technology Policy Group, a policy analysis firm in Virginia. Oh, I wonder how you get a firm make money out of policy analysis. Part of the problem is the SLS was designed and built by all the US space efforts. Boeing was required to use parts from both the Space Shuttle and the DFAT Constellation program from early 2000s. SLS also designed to be built in a series of increasingly powerful versions to lift 50, 105, 130 tons. Wow! What's this? They want 30 to 50, and the smallest one lifts more than enough. So it can be used for both Moon and Mars missions. Wow! That sounds like the SLS has been trying to do too much, but the delays may actually be due to doing too little, says Laurie Garber, who served at NASA's deputy administrator from 2009 to 2013. Despite spending more than $6 billion on the SLS, NASA has never had a specific destination in mind, she says. It really was put together by contractors to extend their own contracts. The current goal of the SLS is to launch the Orion crew capsule, an uncrewed test flight around the moon. That flight has been delayed by 2 years, and NASA's current administrator, Jim Bridenstine, recently said it would be given an opening to use a commercial rocket instead to hit the planned 2020 launch date. There is something really about 1960 people looking in a spacecraft. You can just never redo it. David Bowie and all that type of crap. We go 150 in 51 minutes. Oh, God. Many of the delays could have been avoided. An internal audit by NASA last year found that Boeing made missteps in construction and staffing that resulted in 2.5 years of lost time. Another problem is the SLS is that even being built, it costs more to operate than the upcoming commercial spacecraft. The only rocket anywhere near being ready to carry enough weight into space for the moon mission is SpaceX's Falcon Heavy. This made its maiden launch in February 2018, carrying CEO's Elon Musk's personal Tesla Roadster car and its reusable rocket boosters that landed on Earth just a few minutes later. Reports suggest that Falcon Heavy will return to space this month, carrying communication satellites as first commercial payloads. Rockets and heavy. SpaceX's Falcon Heavy can ferry nearly 64 tons. Well, it's 20 to 50. Into Earth orbit at a cost of $90 million per ride. Estimates for launching of the SLS range from $500 billion to more than $1 billion. And the Ancient rocket design doesn't include reusable parts, increasing the cost. I don't know. I think the reusable parts... using proven legacy hardware means SLS should at least be reliable, but it could also be technologically obsolete before it even gets to the launch pad. Its solid rocket boosters from the 1970s technology developed by the Space Shuttle, says Garver. They're the ones that blew up the Space Shuttle, isn't it? Famous 1986. Christine, what's it? Christine McCall, what colour's her eyes? Blue. One blue this one, and one blue that one. What a fantastic joke. For the reason the SLS has been falling out of favour. For these reasons. Its most powerful version, capable of launching the Orion crew capsule, isn't in Trump's proposed 2020 budget, which calls for cuts for NASA. Oh, God. Already shrinking funding graph. Oh, God. Oh, that's awful. I can't even look at that graph. The budget also sidelines the SLS in favour of cheap commercial rockets for future missions to build the space station circling the moon and send other orbiters to Jupiter and moons, Europa. My God, they're still going to run out of shit to do. That seems at odds with the directive to land on the moon. It seems the deadline for the uncrewed Orion test flight in 2020 and the crewed lunar orbit mission slated for 2022, corners may need to be cut with the SLS. Birdstone has already proposed skipping the planned engine safety test to accelerate the timescale. But ironically, this may be just another reason to ditch the rocket. One of the concerns NASA has about commercial, something or other, space flight, the magazine I've got been blurred, companies, is that they may follow different safety procedures. Quote, NASA had a view that if they're doing it, it's safer, says, I'd agree, Garber. If NASA is considering cuts, though in schedule, the argument that it is inherently riskier to use commercial rockets full part. I know this because my father was a statistician who worked with NASA. Okay, on the probabilities. So, if it's cheaper for and just as safe to use privately built rockets, why hasn't the SLS been axed yet? The agency has sunk a lot of money into the system, often at the urging of politicians from the states where rocket building creates jobs. The SLS and Orion programs are, of course, key to the health of our national aerospace supply space, said Congressman Robert Arnhold at the budget hearing last week. It's also known to preference of NASA managers, says Graver. It's a combination of a lot of people who either flew in space or are leaders in the space program, she says. There's a bunch of men who want the focus on building the big rocket. Oh, gee, that's the death knell, this woman saying that. They would do well to focus on something much smaller, a craft that can land on the moon and then return to lunar orbit. You need a lunar lander, and you've got to demonstrate you can do it, some kind of propulsion in lunar orbit, said Jonathan McGale at Harvard's Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics and Massachusetts. Oh, the lunar things were so risky. How you'd fly to the moon on 60s technology, I'll never know. The last spacecraft to take off from the moon's surface was the Soviet Union's uncrewed Luna 24, which returned samples from the moon rock to Earth's in 1976. NASA hasn't done since 1972 when the final Apollo crew blasted off. Lockheed Martin, the company that is building the Orion capsule, said that the statement that Pierce accelerated timeline is aggressive but achievable and that it could build a crewed lander based on existing systems used in Orion. Blue Origin, a spaceflight firm headed by Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, has plans to develop a lunar lander called Blue Moon. However, this is in concept phase and is at present intended to transport cargo rather than humans. It could be converted to carry a crew, but Blue Origin doesn't yet have a way to launch it. The firm is currently building its own heavy lift rocket, New Glenn, for Glenn Sneep, or whatever it is, which is able to lift 45 tons, the first planned launch in 2021. Meanwhile, SpaceX is building a Starship, an even bigger rocket than the Falcon Heavy. And while some doubt the new launcher could be ready by 2024, Musk thinks it could be, of course he was. When asked on Twitter if the Starship could send humans to the moon in 5 years, he said, I think so, for sure, worth giving it our best shot. Unless you're not on it, mate. McDowell says Blue Origin or SpaceX rockets are the best for NASA to take humans to the moon. He says either firm could probably send a crewed mission into orbit around the moon within 5 years, but it would need the agency's help to fund the lunar lander. Either way, it probably won't happen by 2024. SpaceX talks a good game and delivers great stuff, but never on schedule. It says it's going to do it. While Blue Origin prefers a slow and steady approach, well, I think it's got no option, does it? How are we going? 177. Finally an hour. I'm going to have to give up soon. Well, look, I'm not doing the same calorie burn, but at least I'm reading at the same time. So I'm going to stop on an hour at the end of this article. Garfa agrees that commercial rockets are the way forward, adding that even by 2014, the deadline can't be met. The latest push towards the moon might be what helps pull the plug on the SLS. The fact that NASA has wrapped its head around possibilities is doing something different than the SLS is a good thing, she says. Okay. Hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, neon, sodium, magnesium, aluminium, silicon, phosphorus, chlorine. Phosphorus, sulfur, chlorine, argon, potassium, calcium, scandium, titanium, vanadium, chromium, manganese, iron, cobalt, nickel, copper, zinc, gallium, germanium, arsenic, selenium, bromine, krypton, rubidium, strontium, yttrium, zirconium, niobium, molybdenum, technetium, ruthenium, rhodium, palladium, silver, cadmium, indium, tin, antimony, tellurium, iodine, xenon, cesium, barium, lanthanum, cerium, praseodymium, neodymium, promethium, samarium, europium, gondolin, terbium, dysprosium, holmium, erbium, thulmium, ytterbium, lutetium, hafnium, tantalum, tungsten, rhenium, osmium, iridium, platinum, gold, mercury, thallium, lead, bismuth, polonium, astinium, astatine, radon, francium, radium, actinium, thorium, paractinium, uranium, plutonium, neptunium, plutonium, americium, curium, Berkeley, californium, Einstein, fermium, mendelium, nobelium, Lawrencium, rutherfordium, dubnium, borium, hafnium, yttrium, dammstrutium, rotgenium, copernican, nipponium, flervium, muscovium, livermorium, tennisium, organisum. There we go. 62 minutes, 190. Okay, thanks a lot for listening. What a go. Hopefully the next reads will be easier.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.